All right, we'll bring this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is March the 5th, and the time is approximately 1:05. Present for the record are Representative Gruenberg, Representative Lynn, Representative Coghill, and myself, Representative Dahlstrom. And we are today going to go over the following governor's appointments to the Judiciary Committee. And several of these folks are online. For Board of Directors of the Alaska Bar, Dr. Donald McLean from Wasilla. The Commission on Judicial Conduct, Mr. Henry K. Novak from Kenai. Alaska Judicial Council from Mr. Charles M. Kopp of Kenai. Violent Crimes Compensation Board, Mr. Jared Godfrey. It says Valdez, but I think he's my neighbor, Nagle River. Who do we have online with us?
The first three.
The first three? All righty. Mr. McLean, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am. This is Dr. McLean here.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your willingness to serve. If you could, this isn't going to be painful, I promise you.
Okay.
If you could just give us a very, just, you know, brief overview of a little bit about you and why you would like to serve on this committee, we would appreciate it.
Well, first, I'd just like to thank the governor for considering me for this appointment. I think it's a great honor and relatively humbling, actually. I've been a practicing dentist in the state of Alaska for 29 years and a member of the community in Wasilla since 1981. And feel that my qualifications, just as a citizen and a longstanding member of the community, would probably, in most cases, allow me to serve the members of the community as a citizen representative. But furthermore, I've been attending a distance legal education program out of California called Concord School of Law for the last 2+ years. I'm in my last year of a 3-year program. That's relatively an attenuated legal degree. They call it an executive juris doctorate degree, and I've spent a great deal of time studying law and have a great interest in the law and basically recognizing how it is the fabric of our community. And would like to continue to put some of this effort that I've used in my education to work, if at all possible, and avail myself of the members of the Bar Association to use my education and my experience in the community and through my education to the best of their ability.
Okay. And I see on your resume that you were employed at Elmendorf Air Force Base. Was this as a civilian employee?
No, I was a dentist. I came up out of dental school in 1978 and practiced as an Air Force dentist for 4+ years.
Oh, well, thank you for that service to our country, too.
I appreciate it.
A committee that has much, much support and respect for you and the others that are serving and have served. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question, Dr. McLean. When you get an executive juris doctor degree, is that the same as a regular JD that you'd be eligible to take the bar?
Representative Gruenberg, no. In fact, my first year I was in the program that would have qualified me to sit for the California first-year law school examination, but my intent was really to become a student of law, and most of the students that complete this program, and even up till now, I've been a tremendous advocate for my patients in terms of their representing them, at least questioning insurance companies of why benefits have been denied and things along those lines, which is a whole other area, I guess, of law and concern in this state, and particularly health care. This particular program I'm in is a health care track program, and what it's done is allowed me to pursue classes specifically in that area, like risk management and product liability and things along those lines. And because it's an attenuated program, most of the people that complete this program are risk managers, hospital administrators, consultants, things along those lines in healthcare.
Through the chair.
Follow up.
Had you attended the School of Law in person at all, or is it all online?
It's all online. It's a very unique program, and actually you could look into it. It's called Concord School of Law, and it has, a very high degree of completion of the California Bar Association's program is required, and I really speak highly of it. It's a lot of work, I can tell you that. I spent last night briefing cases. So,
through the chair, is it accredited or accredited by the state bar?
It's accredited by the state bar of California. But here again, the program I'm in is I have to actually sign a statement that I will not sit for a bar because I assume that the knowledge that I would have when I'm done would allow me to possibly compete at the same level as a JD student.
Is it in Concord?
It's in California. It's out of L.A., I believe. It's a subsidiary of the Kaplan Schools, and it's owned by the Washington Post. And it's been in existence for a number of years. But it was the first accredited for a state bar association degree or license. It was the first one, from what I understand, in the country.
Through the chair, it's not in Concord, California.
Not that I understand.
Because I went to law school in Contra Costa. I mean, not law school. I graduated. Went to high school in Contra Costa County.
Uh huh. I'm not sure how the name actually arose, but that's the name it has. Concord School of Law.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Are there any other questions for Mr. McLean? Mr. Rules Chair, I need a motion. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
His name?
Yes, ma'am. And with gratitude for Mr. McLean, I move that the committee forward his name to the full body for consideration.
Are there any objections? There are no objections here, Mr. McLean. Again, we want to thank you so much for your willingness to serve our state, the time and effort that it takes, and your desire to improve our state and improve the system. So thank you very much. We will be forwarding your name to the full body.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Folks, have a nice day.
Thanks. All righty. The next person that we have is Mr. Henry Novak. Mr. Novak, are you online?
Yes, I am online. You cut in and out, though. I didn't hear all.
Okay, let us know if there's a problem with hearing.
It's come back now, so.
Okay, good. I'll tell you the same thing just in case you didn't hear it. This isn't going to be painful. We appreciate your willingness to serve, and we've reviewed your resume. If you could just give us a very brief overview of why you're interested in serving and any other information that's pertinent that you feel that we should know, we would appreciate it, and then we might have questions from the committee.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Alaska. I was born in Clark's Point, Alaska, and was raised part of the time in the town of Dillingham, where Todd Palin is from. And I've always had an interest in law. I went ahead and got my bachelor's in psychology, and I now run a drug and alcohol treatment program in Kenai and Homer. It's a private nonprofit, and we provide treatment services for the community. And with that, I have a lot of contact with the law and with lawyers and judges, and because of the nature of the work that we do, we're always having to interface with them. And we also, confidentiality and ethics are a very, very big part of what we do and how we operate, and it's sort of standardized as to what is ethical behavior for counselors, what's ethical, you know, legally and otherwise. So I just felt like it's kind of an outgrowth of kind of what I do, and I really think that having been in Alaska for 56 years and around the legal system, I think that I'd be somebody would be an asset to this position.
Sounds like it. Are there any questions, Representative Groenberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were you born in Alaska?
Yes, I was.
I guess you did say that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any Representative Coghill?
Madam Chair, thanks, Mr. Novak, for doing this. One of the things that we've been talking a lot about in this body is ethics. in both the executive and legislative branch with regard to, you know, the process and the ability to enforce some of the issues. In going into this position, I would only ask you to watch out for some things. One of the things that we've had to look for as we've been going through our ethics debate is how do we hold people accountable if they're to be if they are to report? And in the judicial system, I am fearful. I don't have any proof or anything, but I'm fearful that we have people who are reporting in a circular a manner. And for example, a judge or an officer of the court may have to answer to you as a commission, but finally end up having to be before a judge whom they may very well have a conflict with. So I don't understand everything I know about that, but it's a mystery to most of the world. And so as you dig into your ethics law, the dignity of the reporting system, the process that is has to be ethical in itself. For example, you don't want people reporting on people who frankly have authority over them. And then is the commission that you're getting on actually able to enforce the things that come before it? And so I'm fearful that, like in any of the systems, and I'm fearful even within the legislative system, that good old boy systems can prevail. And I would only ask that you you think of it as a new day to look over the ethics of the judiciary.
Well, I appreciate that, and I will do my best to make sure that it is an ethical process, and that you know, I've never been one that's been in the good old boy system, so. That's one of the reasons why I did support Sarah Palin and worked for her down here. But I think that we're coming on an era of probably some real ethics reform in the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. And there was something that you touched on. I agree with Representative Coghill's concerns. And he did ask a question, and I don't know if it was anticipating an answer in the future, but do you know if the commission is in a position to be able to actually make things happen when you vote on them? Do you have any?
I don't know. I don't know that the system well enough to know.
Okay. And then you touched a little bit on counseling and relationships between counselors and patients. And I'll just tell you that in this committee, oftentimes over the last few years, we've had bills pertaining to different things there. And I'm happy to hear that you're sensitive to that and realize that potentially there's some areas that we may have some problems and that we're walking a very fine line sometimes.
Yep. It's the same thing in the counseling field.
Right. All righty. Are there any further questions? Representative Coghill?
And since I've been immersed in the ethics discussion for so long, maybe I can't get away from it, but this particular commission is going to be no small task for you, and so please accept my gratitude. Also, just because we have good verbiage in the statutes doesn't necessarily mean they're being applied properly, and we have found that out around our part of the business, and I would alert you to that as you look at not only what your legal authority is, because it's going to be a new learning curve for you, but does it really match the practice?
Okay, I appreciate that.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I would entertain a motion, Representative Lynn.
Madam Chair, I would, with pleasure, recommend Henry Novak for a position on the judicial Commission on Judicial Conduct. And I'd like to thank Mr. Novak for applying, and I like what you had to say.
Is there any objection from anyone on the committee? There's no objection. We are grateful for your willingness to serve, and as Representative Coghill stated, I think you're going to find there's lots of work. Lots of things to do, so thank you so much. We appreciate
I appreciate it. It's an honor.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, the next person we have up is Mr. Charles Kopp. And Charles, are you on the line, and am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Charles Kopp. That's correct, I go by Chuck.
Oh, Chuck, okay. Well, we're happy to have you here.
Thank you.
And Chuck has applied for a position with the Alaska Judicial Council, and we do have a copy of your resume in front of us. If you could give us a brief overview of why you were interested in serving and tell us any pertinent things about you. Some of them stand out looking at your resume, but just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I was born and raised in Alaska. Other than being born in Anchorage, I spent the first 8 years of my life out in Lake Iliamna, a village of New Halen. Come out of a hunting, fishing, guiding family, and moved to the big town of Kenai in 1972. And I went to school here and went to University of Alaska Anchorage, where I got my bachelor's degree in justice. And since then, I've spent the good part of an entire career in the field of justice. I'm the chief of police here in Kenai, and I've been working with the judiciary, it seems, closely over the last 20 years with respect to everything from research. You know, we're dealing with a lot of the things the council deals with, helping with how effective the felony therapeutic courts are, and been very interested in that, obviously, with the DUI court and the drug courts, which the council research does as mandated by the Constitution. One of the duties being to study for the improvement of the administration of justice and make reports and recommendations to the legislature and the Supreme Court. So the whole area of research in the area of justice and criminal recidivism in Alaska is kind of hand in glove with the job that I've had as a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, just I've probably spent over 1,000 hours in the courtroom as a case investigator, whether it was for homicide crimes or lesser crimes. All that has given me a broad experience and I think more of an appreciation of the judiciary and everything that the council is asked to do with respect to establishing, advertising the positions and interviewing those, determine those most qualified and reporting them to the governor. Something I'm very interested in, and I think it's been an interest that has just come about as a result of my last 20 years of my life being involved with judiciary in one way or the other through my work.
All righty, are there questions? Representative Lynn, and I will tell you that he's a former police officer himself.
Well, that was a long time ago. I was separating fights between Cain and Abel. a long time ago. Obviously, you have a very impressive resume here, and I'm wondering, on the Judicial Council, when you had to make a recommendation for appointment to the Supreme Court, et cetera, and other positions you might make a recommendation for, what are you looking for in ideal candidates that you would forward to the governor for consideration?
Well, you know, certainly integrity, fairness, judicial temperament, suitability of experience, overall strength of the applicant. And these are criteria that are posted, you know, that the public can look those up and see, you know, what are being considered. And those are the ones right off the top of my head. And then, you know, it's would be myself, I would definitely subscribe to that criteria. And I agree with that. I think that fairly reflects what I would be looking for in a judicial applicant.
Can I
follow up?
I know there's always a matter of debate, you know, on judges and so on. You know, it's a fine line between interpreting the law and de facto legislation. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, without trying to put you on the spot too much here.
Right. Yeah, it does seem that interpreting the law does seem to become a great matter of public discussion. And I guess that myself being one member, I certainly bring in a lifetime of experience, which, colors my whole thought process. But I think it's the wisdom is found in the balance of the council, the three attorney representatives and the three public representatives, and then ultimately the Chief Justice. But yes, certainly there is interpretation, and I think that's been a discussion of, or a point of conflict, if you will, in the past, and how much interpretation should there be. But I feel confident there'll be wisdom collectively in the group.
And just one last
follow-up.
There's certain, requirements in the Constitution on the Judicial Council. Do you think any of that needs to be reviewed and looked at with an eye to possible change?
I think in a year or two I would be in a much better position to answer that. I'm pleased with the amount of information that is posted right now for the public to look at and review to see how applicants are scored. And I guess as far as the constitutional requirements, I'm certainly pleased with how the Constitution originally set up the council. In fact, I believe it was one of the first and more carefully exercised councils that was originally set up by our Constitution. And so I would be hesitant to say that there's anything that I have in mind, and I don't. I don't have any agenda in mind or any purpose to change or advocate for change in the Constitution. But I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but I would guess in a year or two after working through several processes with the council, I'd be in a much better position to make an assessment.
Thank you very much. I may talk to you in a year or two.
Okay.
Representative Coghill.
Well, my term expires in about 20 months, so I may not be able to get a chance to talk to you. Well, first of all, thank you for being willing to step into an area that is of huge importance to Alaska. There's two areas I'd like to at least bring up for your study. One of them is, I think that we have a judicial district in Alaska that is in need of help. And I don't know how we're going to get that kind of help, but in your area, I'm not too sure how much impact you're going to have on it, other than making sure that we can get judges. And that brings me to the other point. There is a kind of an interesting political bias within the judicial context from my point of view. I can tell you that there are certain types of political thought, no matter how intellectual they may be, are not very well received by judicial counsel. And if certain people in Alaska hold certain political positions, they are not very well received in this particular arena. Is it your purpose to be open-minded to all political positions?
Yes, absolutely, Representative Coghill. I believe that it's absolutely necessary that every voice be heard, even if on the face of it may sound unreasonable or not well thought through. That's what we're all about. In as far as our freedoms and as far as our public servant responsibilities, is to give everyone an equal and a fair hearing and to treat them with the utmost of respect. I think my job as a police officer for 20 years has really taught me to just restrain my impulse, restrain everything that come kind of instinctively you want to say or do at times. You learn just to keep that reined in and to be very thoughtful and to meditate on what people are telling you and to be reasoned in your response. But I completely support listening to everybody and to treating everybody with an equally open mind.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, thank you. And just from my perspective, And mine is just mine. It's just limited. But if for some reason you think you're going into an apolitical or non-political arena, from my point of view, nothing could be further from the truth. And so I would just caution you that there is a particular bias, and just to be aware. And I don't even know what your particular political views are, but it has distressed me. I've heard many people, including federal court judges, who will not get good ratings from this particular council because of their political standing. So I would urge you to be open-minded to those that have from my perspective, a more conservative view. So, because there have been seem to be have a closed door to them at this point.
I would just back up everything Lynn Congro said.
Thank you, representatives, and you know, I completely I hear what you're saying, and I am. You know, I would encourage you to look at my resume, particularly in my service of nonprofits, and you will see probably a very broad range of things that people could interpret as being conservative to maybe socialist in nature. But I think you'll find that I am committed to the good of Alaskans and to the next generation, and I truly see that service on this council is critical for the greater public good, because I understand that public policy is made for the next generation with our judiciary. And so it is with great somberness that I hear everything you're saying, and I would just encourage you to take heart. And I think as you look at my resume, you'll see that I'm fairly well balanced in the things that I've given my life to and support, and I think you'll, at the end of the day, you'll be very pleased.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kopp. We appreciate.
Okay, thank you.
Your willingness to serve, and when you described your job as a police officer, it kind of reminded me of the job of being a parent. You just have to keep biting the inside of your cheek a lot of times, don't you?
Yeah. I have three of those as well.
Yes. I would entertain a motion. Oh, a question, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've been in court a number of times.
Yes.
What do you think the most important... this is Max Gruenberg, by the way. And I am a practicing lawyer. I'm retired now.
But okay.
I practice family law, and I have done a number of cases down in Superior Court in Kenai.
Okay.
What do you think the most important trait for a judge is?
Well, fairness, and I would list that even above the ability to communicate well, because fairness is going to come out with the most balanced decision. But I think right after that, the ability to communicate well with all parties in the courtroom. If we're talking about an actual courtroom situation, fairness, which would reflect on integrity and the veracity of the judge. And then right after that would be just their ability to communicate.
Hello?
I may continue. You know, Mr. Kopp, I was going to say the ability to listen.
You know, I think that, you know, of course, usually probably the reason why that didn't come out is because as a witness in a trial, which I have been for many hours, as I've said earlier, the judge is usually listening along with and is only ruling on motions, but it's usually the two attorneys that are doing most of the talking. And but you're right. I mean, to absorb what is being said in all that dialogue, the listening is a critical skill. If you're not listening, you're not going to rule well. And so
And my perception is that falls under the ability to communicate well, and I got that out of what you said when you were describing that.
Go ahead. I wanted to hear the rest of your answer.
I think you've got it. I would stay with my fairness and communication, and I certainly feel that listening is probably the larger part of communicating well.
And the reason I'm saying that through the chair is because you're going to do something that really nobody else does in the entire system. And you're going to be listening to the judges, not and the wannabe judges, some of whom are qualified and some of whom really aren't. The folks who are on the Commission on Judicial Conduct may not listen unless, they're in a hearing on a disciplinary matter in front of a judge. But really, you're one of the few occasions when the judges are judged, all the judges, they're judged when they apply, and they're judged when they're retained. Now, when they're retained, they don't necessarily come actually physically before the judicial council. But people who have rated them will be sending in their resumes. And I suppose occasionally, if there's a situation like there was recently where somebody might not be retained, I suppose you might have a hearing or something. But really, you will be in a unique position where, with very little time to listen to the candidates, you will have to make a decision because of the three branches of government. The judiciary is the most removed from the people, the least accountable to them, really, and you have the least opportunity to listen to the judges, because most of the time the judges are on the bench listening to the litigants. And so it's even more critical that you be a good listener, too. That's what I was trying to communicate with you. Any comment?
Well, I just appreciate everything you said. I think your point is very well taken, and I couldn't add anything more beneficial than what you've already said.
Thank you.
If I may continue.
Representative Gruenberg?
The lawyers, some of whom will be commenting, many of them have had an opportunity to know candidates, or when they're up for retention, to come before them. And some of the people who will be sending you comments on retention and rating them will have particular axes to grind or viewpoints to advance, either for the defense or the prosecution or whatever. And it's going to be up to you to sort through the chaff and find the wheat, and that's not always going to be easy because the judges are reticent by nature, and they really they're not very, I think, very skilled necessarily in representing themselves when it comes to responding to charges and countercharges in the context of whether they ought to be retained or in fact appointed in the first case. And it's a difficult task that you have, and sometimes a given governor may not like the number of people you send up or the candidates you send up, and you really have to be particularly independent in doing that, and that's really important. Any comment?
Yes. I agree, and I don't just agree based on what you say as sounding true, but I agree because I know, and I've lived that truth. I am currently chairman of the Alaska Police Standards Council and have been on that council for 4 years. And that council is charged with very similar matters the Judicial Council is charged with, only with respect to police officers. Also sets minimum training standards and employment standards. But, the old adage, he who accuses first sounds the truth until you've heard the answer, until you've heard the accused party give an answer. And that's very true. And as a chief of police, acting city manager, I've been given the responsibility of managing all the affairs for the city of Kenai for most of last year while we were doing a city manager search. That's a lot of personnel and a lot of human resource issues. And your point is all well taken, sir, as far as really listening and not being quick to judge and understanding that there are people who can more eloquently argue for their defense and give an accounting of their actions than are others. And I'm aware of that, and I just agree with what you said.
Thank you.
I'm sure you're ready for a motion.
Representative Lynn, I would like a motion, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kopp. It's been refreshing to hear what you have to say. With that, Madam Chair, I would move Charles Chuck M. Kopp of Kenai to the Alaska Judicial Council.
Are there any objections from members? Seeing none. Mr. Kopp, your name will be forwarded to the full body, and we appreciate very much your willingness to serve, and you have an extensive background in this area. I'm pretty impressed with some of the training and things you've been able to attend, and I think it will do nothing but benefit the entire state. So thank you.
I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and the entire committee for considering me, and I consider it a great honor, and thank you so much.
I guess, Manager, we should have asked the question, what have you not done?
Thank you for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. Next, we have online Jared Godfrey. Are you with us, Mr. Godfrey?
I am here, Madam Chair.
How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm ready to go.
All right. Now, I want to, for the record, straighten out one thing. Are you from Eagle River or from Valdez?
I am now from Eagle River.
Okay, I'm...
I had been from Valdez when I was appointed a few years back, and just recently moved to Eagle River.
I knew that. I just wanted to claim you.
Yes, amen. And, hey, I definitely claim you.
Okay. Well, if you could do, you've been listening to the other gentleman talk, and maybe just give us a brief overview of why you would like to serve again. And I will state that, in my opinion, you've been doing an awesome job. And you and I have had many, many conversations about different situations that you deal with, and I've read your report thoroughly and had all my questions answered to my satisfaction. But if you could just comment on why you would like to serve again and your abilities, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are you one of your constituents?
No.
I missed by a couple streets.
Oh, okay.
But everyone in the state's my constituent representative.
Amen. My mom and my sister and brother-in-law are her.
That's right.
Too. So more of my family is her constituency than not.
That's right. All righty, go ahead, Jared.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have served the previous 4 years on this board. When I came to this board, the board was kind of functioning at a bare minimum. It was managing to disseminate claims for innocent victims of violent crimes that came to the board, but there was a lot that needed to be done. There was certain processes that could be streamlined, and there was a much more comprehensive approach that could be applied to more effectively do what we do and further disseminate the information of the availability of this board and its function throughout the state. There are certainly areas in the state that were disproportionately, inordinately overrepresented in a proportion of or overall representation of the population at whole. And I'll give you an example. That would be rural Alaska, Alaska Natives in particular. Given the representation they are of the population at whole, they're way overrepresented as victims of violent crime. And when we say violent crimes, that also includes things like sexual abuse of a minor, sexual assaults, molestation, and things like that. And we put together pretty much a three-year plan, a 2 to 3 year plan, and we developed a relationship with a sub-agency in the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. We spoke with the director of this agency. It's called Tribal Victims. The Department of Tribal Victims Assistance, which obviously would include Alaska Natives as well as American Indians. And there's a lot of funds available specifically for Alaska Natives. Heretofore, we've not been able to procure those funds, but no one had aggressively gone after them. We have to go after them and make it happen, and if we can do that, in essence, we can have funds that are earmarked to aid in the healing process and the removal of Alaska Natives from domestic violence and violent situations, and you know, remove them to a safe area or a different part of the state, different part of the family, somewhere else in rural Alaska, what have you, relocate them, help with their healing and their recovery and the education of the cycle they're caught in so as to stop the perpetuation of the whole cycle, the very destructive cycle. That's just one of the things we're going after. We're also taking a cue from the President's faith-based initiative to outreach with the churches. We've had some pretty impressive legislation come about in the last few years, and it has essentially brought us to the point where in the very, very near future, we will crest 1,000 claims in a year, which we've seen an exponential increase all but 1 year. We had a down year, and that was when our funding was down, so we had to hold back on the amounts, the dollar amounts of the wards, and also the rate at which we were distributing claims, essentially backlogging some into the next fiscal year. That being said, we know that we're going to get over 1,000 claims. In one sense, it's a positive thing because it says, hey, this board serving this function is doing its job. In the other sense, it's discouraging because it shows you how many innocent victims of violent crimes we have. But nonetheless, we're here for any and all of them, and so we're trying to educate as many people as possible. And now the court system, the law enforcement entities in the state, as well as the hospitals, emergency rooms are required by law to inform victims and potential victims of violent crime about the existence of us. And so the only place we saw left to educate was the churches throughout the state, because there are some people that will turn to their church and for various reasons, completely avoid law enforcement, courts, and the hospitals, so they fall through the cracks, if you will. So we have a pretty aggressive agenda over the next couple of years, and we have an extremely motivated board right now. We have a very active MD, and in the past, actually through my tenure prior to this MD being on the board, that was a problem. And when you're asking a doctor, you know, it's in practice, you know, to put in the hours and the board meetings and special functions that we do attend, it's hard to get that doctor there. And we've been blessed with an attorney that's now retired that has been able to afford the time. But I just think that, you know, once this current board moves on, we will have set a new standard, you know, for the future board members to adhere to. And they will know as the norm is what we leave the norm to be, as opposed to what it was when we got here. So we're trying to set a new standard and create a new norm. And, you know, with that, that kind of summarizes why I wanted to go ahead and hopefully be appointed one more time and finish what we started. And on a side note there, Representative Gruenberg, Concord Law School is, in fact, in Los Angeles, and I can say that, as Dennis was saying earlier, I'm currently in the same program. And in your third year on electives, you can, in fact, leave and go and take some elective courses on campus. They actually have a joint operation, if you will, an agreement, an arrangement with University of Missouri for certain elective classes and such. But
good. Thanks, Representative Gruenberg. Loves having this kind of information.
Yeah, it is. The dentist was not exaggerating the time commitment. I mean,
no, I know.
Law school is law school. I don't care what the format.
Right.
The classes are all pretty much stacked on the weekend, but the rest of it is your assignments and then the reading and everything else that goes with it. It's there. So.
Now, Jared, one of the things that you had talked about was funding that you have become aware of that is potentially available from D.C. for tribal victims assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be one person on the board that would be tasked with the responsibility of that and writing the grants and that type of thing. And then also if you could comment, and you may not have this information yet, if the funding has to be matched equally by state funds.
No, as far as I know right now, it does not. Part of our funding, just in general, the funding we do receive, every penny the state puts up, and the bulk of it has historically come through the garnished criminal PFDs. The feds match 60 cents to a dollar on that, historically, and that's has no cap. So if the state puts up $50 million, and they're doing 60 cents to a dollar to the $50 million, obviously, our typical budget runs between 1.5 to 2 million, and for the most part, we do not receive from the general fund. We bring back in, a year ago, we brought back in almost $100,000 into the general fund, and so we're trying to activate a fund that was created years ago for us. But previous OMB director, you know, was not big on those, so that didn't happen. But it was money that really didn't originate there, and yet it was finding its way back through subrogation agreements, through restitution and through lawsuits that were eventually settled after the fact, but we'd already made the awards. That's a side note. As far as I know, Madam Chair, there would be no need for the state to put up any matching funds. As far as having a grant, writer, I think that we can take care of that in-house. Our problem has been in the past, and it has been the same problem that multiple other victims assistance advocacy programs have encountered, is the council is the contact on that. And historically, I don't know, because I had not met with the director of the council. Once this problem became apparent to me, I told the board administrator I want a meeting with the director, the new director or interim director, 2 months ago, mm-hmm. of the council, because they were not going to submit grants for many different victims advocacy programs, MAD being one of them. And it didn't require any work on their part or anything. It merely required them to submit it, and they wouldn't entertain it. I cannot say that that was an issue since I've been on the board, because we had not done that. It had been in the past, prior to me being on the board. I intend to see to it that that's not an issue. I can't imagine what their motivation would be unless there is a cap on absolute allocation that can be distributed to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and any funds that are non-related to their specific mission will then cut into, bear in mind I'm purely speculating here because I've not met with the director, may then cut into their piece of the grant money. That is the only plausible reason I could come up with for them denying other people's grants and not submitting them.
Okay.
And
well,
so that's something that I hope to not have an issue with. And it will become a pretty messy process if that does become an issue. I will definitely mobilize the troops, so to speak, to overcome that. But I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the new director and try to explore why that is.
Right.
Has been a problem. Hopefully that won't be an issue.
And if it does become an issue, if you could communicate with me, which
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely,
and
I will. And one other thing, Madam Chair, we also had requested a interim. A year ago and then this year as well, because we have such a wealth of data that, as far as I know, no one else has some of the specific data we do on victims of violent crime in the state. We do not have the manpower in the office in Juneau. Our staff is three people down there. And we wanted an intern to spend a few months compiling and extrapolating various statistics for our own benefit, but also for the legislature at large, so you guys also would have, some degree, something of a template to see what types of victimization are happening throughout the state, what percentage of them are Alaska Natives, what locations are more hard hit. Obviously, metropolitan areas are, but sometimes you'll see communities of similar sizes, 4,000 or 5,000 people in various parts of the state that are not equally represented. So there's a lot of social value to these statistics, and hopefully if we do get that intern, we'll be able to provide that to the legislature for all kinds of uses in the future.
Well, thank you. I know the information that you provided us before has been very helpful to me, and I know that the Compensation Board has a tough job, but I think, well, I know that what you do, I know the intent of it, and I know, having spoken personally with several people who have gone through the process, unfortunately, as a victim, that it has helped them to be able to find solace and bring to closure some of the events that have happened and move on from there. So we appreciate that very much.
Glad to do it.
Questions from Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you. This will not be as trivial as the Concord.
Thank you.
But we could find something trivial, I'm sure.
No.
Mr. Godfrey, you were very helpful in passing the law several years ago that added arson to the list of compensable crimes. And now that you've been there a little longer, do you find any other crimes that ought to be added to the list of compensable crimes?
We still have claims that come to us that we will take in, even though they're not explicitly delineated in the statute saying, you know, these are crimes compensable. They are not prohibited statutorily, and that was the way arson was. I could certainly understand your and Gatto's concern with that in the past, and the board was happy to do that. I thought it was great to go ahead and include that, because in the future boards may deem anything not written out in statute as being non-compensable. Victims of drunk driving accidents are not, in fact, explicitly outlined in the statute. This board has made it a de facto compensable crime, without a doubt. I mean, that certainly is. It can be very violent. I mean, it can lead to death, being maimed, paralyzed, you name it. So while this board is seated, that's not an issue. In the past, the previous board did, in fact, choose to view that as nothing more than an automobile accident because it was not explicitly outlined in the statute, and they would not entertain that. They said, well, insurance should cover that. Yeah, that's all fine and good, but that doesn't always work out that way. And also, sometimes when you're obviously being an attorney, you'd know it could be 2 to 3 years before that's settled, and their need is pressing, and now. So, I would say the only one in the future that may be a concern once this board is gone, as long as I'm the chair, this is not an issue. Same with other ones that are not explicitly written out. They're still, if we can see that it's a violent crime in nature, then they'll be held to the same standard as any other one.
Through the chair.
Follow up.
If the board would like to see the statute expanded, if you could send a letter to the committee members and the chair, then we could consider possibly introducing that as a committee bill or something.
Outstanding.
But I think that rather than just doing it on the fly, why don't you see what the board would like and then let the committee know if I may make that suggestion through the chair.
Great. Thank you.
Great.
Are there any further questions from members? I would entertain a motion, please.
Madam Chair.
Representative Coghill.
I move that we forward Representative Mr. Godfrey's name to the rest of the representatives and full body to consider, and certainly I would highly recommend it.
I agree. Are there any other comments from committee members? Great. Jared, your name will be moved forward, and again, we thank you for the work that you do. I know that it's not always pleasant.
Okay.
I also know that you have a very young family and that you're very, very dedicated to this job, and you spend many, many hours doing this, and we appreciate you for doing this.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Forwarded
to both bodies. And with no further business before us, the judiciary meeting is going to adjourn, and it is 2:00. Thank you.